The Holy Roman Empire, Charlemagne, Part 5, Charlemagne and Theology. Now, among the greatest loves of Charlemagne was theology. His tutor, Alcuin, as a well-educated and knowledgeable teacher, who was well-versed in the Bible, his tutelage of the king showed through at various times. Among the most momentous of Charlemagne's theological achievements was a council that he convened in Frankfurt in 794. The council was convened with the purpose of doing what the Council of Nicaea and other councils convened by the Pope had done. Charlemagne hoped to resolve certain theological disputes, some of which threatened the security and the peace of many cities. Among the issues were iconoclasticism and the doctrine of adoptionism. Now, iconoclasticism has been a controversy since the days of the Emperor Leo and the Byzantines, Leo the Isaurian, decades before Charlemagne. Leo had been a devout Christian, but he was also an emperor and had inherited their arrogance. Over the centuries, the Orthodox Christians, borrowed from their pagan ancestors, had made many statues, icons, idols, and paintings of various saints from the Bible. As time went on, many Christians actually prayed to the saints as their idols. This was biblically the sin of idolatry and forbidden in the Ten Commandments themselves. The Muslims hurled accusations of idolatry, as did more educated Christians. The embarrassment of Leo was too much for him to endure. So Leo decided to rid Christianity of idolatry, but his arrogance in doing so ensured that icons would remain a part of both later Catholic and early Eastern Orthodox Christian Church. For Leo was not content to rid himself of idols, but to force the general population to accept this as well. Most people would believe that by giving someone an image to pray to, it allowed you to envision what person looked like, what the deity looked like, to give something concrete. And instead of using it as just a medium, they began to take on a kind of a belief of their own. The controversy began in the early 8th century AD when Leo notably decided to make an example of himself. Adorning the imperial palace itself was a large statue. He felt he would show the people his devotion by destroying this idol. Well, it was a statue of Jesus Christ. Obviously, the people saw the act as blasphemy. The emperor had torn down a memorial to the Savior, and rioting enveloped the city. Pope Gregory II condemned the act as well, but rather than learning from his situation, Leo became more determined than ever. Leo bided his time, and in 5 years' time, he acted again. This time, soldiers were given orders to break into homes and search for icons. All icons were to be destroyed and smashed, hence the name iconoclasticism, meaning smash icons. This act was far worse than the first, and again brought condemnation from Pope Gregory II. Pride, however, feeds pride, and Gregory's defiance of Leo made the emperor determined to make the pope submit. He ordered Gregory's arrest, but Gregory died before the arrest could occur. His successor was Gregory III, who almost immediately held a synod condemning Emperor Leo and excommunicated the emperor himself. The breach did not permanently divide East and West, but it did put the pope at enmity with the emperors. The emperor's failure to defend the West against the Lombards was compounded by the seeming blasphemy of Leo. For the next half century, the iconoclasts and the supporters of icons fought with one another, sometimes violently. Officially, the Pope and the Catholic Church held the icons were not idols, but simply to be revered. Ironically, Charles the Great, Charlemagne, took the stance that favored Leo, but without militant enforcement. He declared with Alcuin that image worship was idolatry and should not be permitted by believers. This view was in direct contrast to that presented by Pope Hadrian at the Second Council of Nicaea in 787, which had declared iconoclasm a heresy and restored the veneration of the images. The Pope, however, was able to argue that Charlemagne had a faulty translation of the edict and that the Church only permitted adoration of images. The fact that the Pope was so eager to make Charlemagne's edict compatible with his own illustrates the esteem which Charles held in Italy as well as in his own kingdom. The second issue of note is that of adoptionism. This doctrine teaches that Christ was an ordinary man adopted by God and was not his begotten son. Along with Protestants, modern Catholics, and Orthodox Christians, Charlemagne justly condemned this heresy. Its significance is in the fact that it took a stance which not only put it at odds with the Spanish Church, where adoptionism flourished with the Visigoths, but that several popes had also taught the doctrine as well. Pope Hadrian, nevertheless, was not among its adherents and was delighted in the decision. Hadrian likewise condemned the view, and the Catholic Church officially distanced itself from this doctrine. Indeed, Martin Scorsese's controversial movie, The Last Temptation of Christ, is based on adoptionist theology. The council was only one of many that Charlemagne held, but it shows his concern for doctrine and truth, as well as his skill in diplomacy. The end result of Charlemagne's condemnation of the icons was negligible, but it stands in stark contrast to Leo's, which had resulted in, this is Emperor Leo in the East, which had resulted in riots, death, and persecution. Even the Pope danced around Charlemagne's views and pretended that they were compatible with his own. Among those who attended the Council of Frankfurt was Claudius, the Bishop of Turin. Claudius has been called the Protestant of the 9th century because of his strong stances against traditionally Catholic views. In fairness, however, most of these controversial beliefs were not yet formally established as church doctrine. There were, nevertheless, gaining prominence among the people and the clergy, and Claudius was quick to condemn them. He criticized the worship of relics, prayers for the dead, too much emphasis on tradition, and held that the Lord's Supper was a memorial, not an actual sacrifice of Mass. He is significant, for he and with the support of the Archbishop of Lyon and other Milanese priests, advocated independence from Rome. He and his allies in northern Italy near Milan often disregarded and even ignored the Pope. This independent-minded attitude continued in that region for centuries and produced the first forerunners of the Reformation. It is the place from whence the Waldensians blossomed and where John Calvin would follow in Martin Luther's steps. It is also where Charlemagne's best supporters came from. So we can see some of these issues that are coming up, and I think it's important to put in the position here the fact that the Pope is not universally recognized in Western Europe at all. It has some power in Italy, and over, obviously, Charlemagne is important because of his connection to the Roman Empire. But the Pope is relatively minor here. You see, you even have the Milanese groups and others who are against the views of the Pope at that particular time. But that is going to change when our next section comes in, because that's where the Pope and Charlemagne cement the relationship and you have the end of the united Roman Empire and we can begin the Holy Roman Empire. Now the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987 to 1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.